Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Friday, February 3rd, 2023. On today's episode, we're going to discuss the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film editorial director Peter Serretta, and joining me on today's podcast is Slash Film writer Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
So, Ryan, I saw in the Slack that you saw the new M. Night Shyamalan movie.
I did. So as we talked about the last time you and I got together, is Knock at the Cabin comes out this weekend, which is M. Night Shyamalan's follow-up to Old. And it is very likely going to dethrone Avatar: The Way of Water at the box office, finally. Look, don't get me wrong. M. Night Shyamalan has made some really bad movies, and he knows that. He had a pretty bad run there, but I think ever since The Visit, which came out in 2015, he's kept things like smaller, and he's made a lot of very interesting movies since then. I imagine mileage is going to vary on this one, but I will say, just for any listeners who are considering headed to the movies this weekend, me personally, Knock at the Cabin was my favorite M. Night Shyamalan movie in almost 20 years since The Village. So, really liked it a lot. I think Dave Bautista gives an Oscar worthy performance in there, at least worthy of a nomination. I mean, he might be my favorite actor working today, which is crazy to say, but yeah, it, very good performance driven movie. And it worked for me. So, you know, for anyone thinking about maybe going to see something that isn't Avatar this weekend, I'd give this one a shot.
Maybe I'll cancel my, my fifth Avatar screening reservation and make it. No, I don't even have an Avatar reservation.
Wait, have you really seen it four times?
No, I was just trying to make something up. I've seen it twice, which is probably more than I need to see it, but I liked it a lot. I just don't think I need to see it again, but I'm excited. I'm gonna go see this weekend for sure, so maybe we'll talk about it on Monday. But Ryan really likes it, so go check it out. But let's hit the news. First up, let's talk about Marvel, and Hitmonkey is getting a second season from Hulu, but it's not going to be Marvel anymore.
Well, not necessarily. So first off, this is pretty crazy. Like, so Hitmonkey was first released on Hulu back in November of 2015. It was actually one of the first big interviews I ever did for the site. I interviewed the co-creators of the show, Josh Gordon, Will Speck, and they were really cool guys, and they had talked a lot about, you know, like, this is a very obscure Marvel character, and they actually, like, wanted to make this show. Like, this wasn't something that was handed to them. This was something they really wanted to do. So the first season came out, kind of came and went. The assumed reason for that is this was part of, at one point, right before Marvel Television was shuttered, Hitmonkey, MODOK, Tigra and Dazzler, and Howard the Duck were all supposed to get shows. That was four shows that would result in a big crossover called The Offenders. Well, what happened is once Marvel Television was closed and all of those responsibilities went to Marvel Studios to make shows like Loki and WandaVision that are more tied to the MCU, most of these shows were scrapped. But MODOK and Hitmonkey were pretty far along, so they kept them going. But MODOK was canceled after one season, so it was largely assumed that Hitmonkey would follow suit. Well, 15 months after the first season dropped, it has been confirmed that Hitmonkey will return for a second season. The action will be headed to New York. We don't have a release date, but the little teaser that was released on social media does say coming soon. So my read on that is that they've been quietly working on this and we're just now finding out about it. Most of the original team is returning. So that's really all we know about the show. But what's interesting, it was billed as Marvel's Hitmonkey in its first season. Now it's just going to be Hitmonkey. There will still be like a Marvel title card before, because it is still technically a Marvel show. But the reason the Marvel part is being dropped from the actual title is because, as mentioned, this was originally a Marvel Television production, but now it is being produced by 20th Century Animation. So it is actually technically not a Marvel production, because it's not coming from Marvel Studios and Marvel Television. Sorry, I just had the trash people outside my house there. So sorry, guys. But yeah, so it's for, so because it's a 20th century production, it's technically not a Marvel production. So there, that's why the Marvel name is being dropped.
Weird, but makes sense, I guess. Okay, let's talk about another Marvel thing. And you may have seen in the trailers for Ant-Man Quantumania, or Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, that Ant-Man has written a memoir. And apparently that book is actually coming out. It's called Look Out for the Little Guy. And Disney has released kind of a trailer for this memoir. Online, you can watch Paul Rudd talk about it. It's a 256-page book. It's real. It's actually a real book. It's coming out in September. So, you know, the movie comes out this month. Yeah, this month. So you're going to have to wait until like closer to the end of the year to actually read the book itself. It's going to be $26.99 retail. I don't know. I think this is kind of fun because it gets to fill in some of the character's backstory, and it's written, you know, by himself. So it is a memoir. It's a self-biography.
And, yeah, that's what's crazy is it's like Scott Lang's in-universe memoir.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, I don't know. I mean, this is, I think it's, and you can pre-order it right now. Like, it's a very real book. Like, it's so, it is 256 pages. They really did this.
I was thinking, what, like, this is a cool idea. What other fictional books from movies would you have loved to have seen released? Like,
I mean, mine's easy. Do you have one?
I mean, I have two. The first one, I was going to say Chaos Theory by Dr. Ian Malcolm.
Well, is it? It's called God Creates Dinosaurs, because that was my that.
Oh,
was my
God Creates. Yes, that's
right. Because that was absolutely my pick, was God Creates Dinosaurs by Ian Malcolm. I would still read that book if someone made it to this day. I would. Also, Alan Grant's book, which I, you know, because Tim famously in the first one talks a lot about how he wrote like two books, and there was like the one, you know, like, you know, but anyway, so, and then I think it's in Jurassic Park 3, they talk about how he wrote another book, but they liked his first book better because like it was before he hated dinosaurs. And I sort of would like to read both of Alan Grant's books in context, the two there, but.
I guess the other one would probably be from my favorite movie of all time, A Match Made in Space, which is from Back to the Future, written by George McFly.
Oh, that would be fun.
I'm trying to think what other famous books and movies are there.
Well, the one thing I was trying to think, and I'm sure that I could come up with some pressed when if I thought about it more, but I was thinking there must be like movies where like people have made comics, right? And like those comics weren't real, or like they were, you know, and like I would sort of be interested in that sort of thing. But yeah, no, the first thing that came to mind for sure was Ian Malcolm's book.
Hold on. I'm looking at a list here. Four Leaf from Tropic Thunder.
God, that's right. Four Leaf's book. Oh, I would read the fuck out of that. Oh my God. I love Tropic Thunder. That's right. I would totally read that.
How I Did It by Victor Frankenstein from Young Frankenstein. That would be
okay,
a good
that's
one.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Let me see if there's any other good ones here.
Four Leaf's was good. I forgot about that.
I mean, this one's a deep dive, but This Time by Jesse. From the indie franchise Before Sunset.
Oh, you know what would be another good one is it was a really recent one, but Flash Thompson wrote that book in Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, good.
I think it was called Flashpoint. Which I think was supposed to be sort of a reference to the Flashpoint storyline in DC, but anyway, but yeah, that would be kind of a funny one.
What about the Tobin Spirits Guide by J.H. Tobin from Ghostbusters? That would be fun. I feel like that would be more of like something I would just want to have on my shelf and not like actually read.
That one interests me so much less. But yeah, I mean, I can see a lot of people being interested in that.
The Handbook for the Recently Deceased from Beetlejuice.
Oh, that's hardly like, that's more of like a how to, that's not even really like a book. That's, I mean, that's cool. That would be really neat. There must be that must be a thing that like exists somewhere, right? Like where like that, like someone probably has, like that's probably been made. The other thing is like, I don't even know if they really count, but like the Jedi texts from like some of the ones that we see in like The Last Jedi, for example, like some of like, cause those are like, those were books written by characters in the universe that were like, they have a very specific purpose, but that would be kind of interesting.
I'd read them. How about Paul Sheldon's novel Misery's Child from the movie Misery?
I love Misery. That's one of my favorite Stephen King adaptations. That would be good. I would read that.
Yeah. Family of Geniuses by one of the Tenenbaums and the Royal Tenenbaum. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, I'm getting diving down like a hole here, but I feel like, how nerdy would it be to have like a bookshelf and you have like one whole shelf just of like fictional books from
universe books, and people you'd have to figure out who you could actually hang out with by like who picked out, you know, like, oh, hey, that would be kind of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Let's talk about Peacock. Peacock. We mentioned this the other day that their free subscription tier, we were talking about something else.
And we were talking about how much money they're losing.
Yes, that's what we were talking about. And I didn't even know about this, but apparently I was questioning, is the free subscription tier worth it for them? And it turns out probably not, because Peacock's free subscription tier is going away. They're pivoting towards premium content. So here's the details. So the free tier is not available for new users. So if you sign up for the service, the free tier is not available as an option. But if you have the free tier, you are a subscriber, they're not going to remove the feature for those who have subscribed. But I'm assuming this means that you're not going to, like, there's going to be less and less offerings as time goes on, right? Like, they're not going to be putting effort into the free tier if they're not even offering it for new users.
No, this is their way of phasing it out for sure.
Yeah. So the move is part of Peacock's growth strategy, according to The Wrap, which includes a shift to the $5 premium membership, which offers obviously a larger catalog of content. And they have a premium plus tier, which also offers downloading. So I wanted to ask you, Ryan, is freemium over? Like, I know we see some other streaming services like Netflix, they're going to be in Disney Plus, they're offering lower tiers with ads, but you still got to pay money. What do you think about freemium?
Oh, I don't think it's over at all. I think it might be over for, I think Peacock right now, like we talked about last time, I had serious doubts about their ability to be able to scale up at this point with how much money they're losing. And I think to me, this speaks to that, because I don't know how many people you're going to be able to convert, but I think you need to be able to, at least now they're sort of like, okay, we got to take that away and at least see what we can get, you know, and for them, I think it makes sense. But I think the thing is you have services like Tubi that seem to be doing really well for themselves by going purely on a freemium model, you know, like where it's like, you know, you are just, you know, they're just free ad supported, and Pluto seems to be doing pretty well for itself. So I don't think that model is over, but I do think you will probably have a separation of church and state there, right? Where like there will be the premium services, and then you will have the ones that are sort of like trying to corner the market on, hey, you don't want to pay for another thing, just deal with some ads and come to us. And like Tubi, for what it's worth, like they have a wild library. Like, I don't love sitting through ads, but Tubi's library is nuts.
Do like they have a premium version where you don't have to sit through that?
Nope. Tubi's pure thing is just like, we are free. We come, but they have like,
Ryan, I will never watch it then. It will never happen.
No, I hear you. But I think what's interesting about Tubi is that they have like some of the movies they have, particularly for like genre fans, like they had like straight up rips of like movies that were not technically legal, but like there were these weird old genre movies you couldn't find anywhere else.
Really?
Like, they're just, yeah, people were posting some screenshots, like obscure stuff I might not watch, but they're just like, Tubi has a pretty wild library of stuff. And what's interesting too is a lot of times you'll look for something like, is this streaming somewhere? And it is like on Tubi, like, and it might not be anywhere that you can watch it without ads, but like Tubi's happy to, but then also there's like Freevee, which is the worst name streaming service out there, which used to be IMDb Pro or whatever.
That's the one owned by Amazon.
Amazon, yeah. So like Freevee has a pretty good library as well. But again, I don't think they're going to move to. So again, I don't think that model's over with. I just think it's pivoting to like a service that is exclusively that, or a service that is not that.
Yeah, I think it's all a perception thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't see like the Freevee thing. It's not like Amazon Prime Freevee. Because you don't want to like taint the water with,
yeah,
like,
and I think the problem is Peacock had one foot in both camps and they had a bit of an identity issue there.
Yeah, But I also think that, like, it's perception of, like, value in something. Like, people put more value. You've talked a lot about movies and theaters and stuff like that. If a movie gets a theatrical run, people, you know, are more excited to watch that when it's on VOD or streaming. They're like, it's like, even though it's just the same as any movie that, like, is released on streaming, technically, right? Like, the same amount of effort and time and money is spent on, like, these things. It's just the perception of, like, oh, this was a premium product that I'm now, so I'm going to pick the premium product over the thing that was just dumped on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Again, I think perception is huge in that way. And yeah, it does matter. It does matter. But I still, regardless of this, I don't think this is, like, a brilliant move or anything. I think it's a move that they have to, they kind of sort of have to do. But, like, I don't think it's going to help them get to a sustainable business model. And I, you know, that's just, like, one man's opinion. I think it sort of sets them up a little better for, let's say if Comcast wanted to buy Netflix, then they don't have to deal with, does Netflix now have a free tier because Peacock no longer has a free tier? Again, that's me recklessly speculating, but, you know, I still don't know if they can get to a point of sustainability at this rate, but.
Yeah. And Netflix is scrambling to get rid of password sharing. We'll talk about that in just a moment, but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, I want to talk about this Netflix and password sharing. They've been saying for, I think, like a year now, or actually a couple of years now, that they've been trying to, you know, everybody's sharing their Netflix passwords, and Netflix wants some money. They want to make money because, you know, it's not just like family sharing anymore. It's now friend sharing, and there's people across not just the United States, but actually sharing with people around the world, around the globe. So how are they going to do it? We just learned that. So they're going to be mandating that each device with a specific login be connected to the same Wi-Fi network at least once every month. There's more to it than that, because that would be shocking, because there's, you know, some people that, like, obviously travel and have, like, a travel thing that they're going to use. So the network will be considered the primary network for every account in each profile. And those that do not connect through the network will be forced to sign up for an individual account. That is with one exception. So when a device outside of the household signs into an account or is used a bit, the streamer says, we may have you verify the device before it can be used to watch Netflix or switch Netflix household. So I'm going to give you what it says on the Netflix website here. It says, to verify the device, Netflix sends a link to the email address or phone number associated with the primary account owner. The link opens a page with a 4-digit verification code. The code needs to be entered on a device that requested it within 15 minutes. If the code expired, you'll need to request a new verification code from the device. Once successful, the device can be used to watch Netflix. Device verification may be required periodically. So I think there's a little bit of wiggle room here. So yes, if you're using, they're trying to make it so that Netflix is used only in one household, one Wi-Fi network. But if you are, like, traveling and using your laptop or your phone, it will have you, like, do this verification thing, which is going to be annoying, but it doesn't mean you can't use your phone or TV. And it also doesn't mean that, like, you know, your brother across the country that's using your Netflix account couldn't do that. It just is going to be an annoyance to you to within the 15 minutes enter the verification code so that he can watch the latest episode of Stranger Things. So I'm wondering, Ryan, what do you think about this? Like, is this going to stop password sharing?
I think it's certainly, because again, I think you're going to have the savvier people that get around it, right? And then I think you're going to have the less savvy people who just want to watch a thing.
Oh my God. I didn't even think about that, because now there's going to be all those, like, I watch a lot of YouTube and I get a lot of those VPN ads. They're always like promoting in the VPN ads. They're like, oh, you can watch, you know, Netflix titles from other countries by changing your location. Now it's going to be like them advertising you, you know, you could share your Netflix account by, you know, saying that you're,
but I do think it will. I imagine, look, Netflix didn't do this lightly. They spent a lot of time deciding how they were going to do this, whether they were going to do this. I think they probably ran the numbers, and yeah, some people are probably going to cancel. Some people are probably going to be very annoyed about it. I think that ultimately this is one of the only ways left for them to get a decent number of new subscribers. So they're probably hoping that, their numbers probably told them people, rather than deal with whatever it would take to continue sharing a password, because again, like you're saying, it's not that it's impossible. It's just that, like, it's going to cause inconvenience for some people. People may just go, screw it, I'll pay the $10 to $15 a month just to not deal with that.
I think that's smart, because that's what happened to music, right? Like MP3 downloads, Napster, all that. Like, it became more of an inconvenience to download it than it was to pay for it.
Right. People will pay for my best friend in the world, he refused to pay for music. He got to a point, and that's a big sticking point for me. I believe since seventh grade, I was the most unpopular person I knew, because I was like, don't illegally download music. This is bad. And I still am that way to this day. But when Spotify, so he didn't pay for anything. But so once Spotify came in, he's like, screw it. This is easy. You know, like I would rather pay my 11, 12 bucks a month to just have it be easy than, you know, so I do think there's an element of that for certain people. I do think this is going to be wildly unpopular though. And, you know, the initial adjustment is going to be, you know, people are going to be unhappy, but I just think for so many people, Netflix is just such a weirdly essential expenditure month to month that, you know, they're just going to say, screw it.
I think this is a very smart way of handling it. I think the mistake here for me is not offering a more expensive tier that would allow extended family, would allow, like, you know, three households or something.
I wouldn't doubt that that's something that would come into play. But I think the other thing is, though, that they need to sort of be able to goose those subscriber numbers, right? They need to say we have new, more subscribers, not the same subscribers on a higher tier. Because, like, they, you know, that Wall Street likes those bigger numbers. So, that would be my guess on that, but I also don't think that that's an impossibility down the line. I just, I think this is something. And the other thing I think, and, you know, we've seen this, we're going to talk about something in a second, and I can connect a point here, but I think what we're seeing is that there are trends in the industry, right? Someone's going to put their foot out there first, and if it works, others will follow. If this is successful for Netflix, other companies will do something similar. You know, like, this is just the way that it's going to be, because it's, you know, so... You know, don't, you know, if this works, expect this to be the normal.
For sure. Okay. The last story I want to talk about today is Showtime is rebranding. We're going to tell you the new name in just a second. And they've also canceled a handful of shows. Some stuff is going on there. So the new name for Showtime is, wait for it, Paramount Plus with Showtime.
Right. And people, if people don't know, Paramount owned, so like Paramount, which used to be like Viacom CBS, it's just now called Paramount because they rebranded after, you know, whatever, but Paramount owned Showtime. So those were like separate entities, because Showtime was largely a premium cable network. They launched Paramount Plus as their streaming arm. Showtime, they just finally decided that, like, screw it, it's better to combine these things to have a better shot in the streaming game long term.
By the way, I don't think this is, like, I know this is like a long thing and no one's going to say, I'm going to go watch Paramount Plus with Showtime, right? Like, they're not going to say that. They're just going to say, I'm going to watch Showtime. But I actually would have preferred this for like HBO Max or whatever they're going to call it. Like, I would have preferred like Warner Brothers Plus with HBO.
Maybe. you know, I don't know. Again, I think branding is so hard for these damn things because you have to sort of explain what the hell is under this umbrella, right? Yeah. Netflix was lucky because they were just Netflix. Everyone else had to be like, you know, that's where, again, that's where I think Peacock failed badly. Like, nobody really thinks of NBC as the Peacock. You know what I mean? It was like, I get why they did it, but like HBO Max, like HBO was the strongest brand in HBO's, you know, under Warner Media's umbrella. So like, you know, I get why you go with the branding. Although I did, again, I mentioned,
but then now they're considering changing it to Max, which is like the least
right
interesting part of the component.
But because they put themselves in a box, like I just recently read the It's Not TV book, the HBO sort of like chronicled the history of HBO. And yeah, at the very end, they sort of went over HBO Max and they talked about how they arrived at the name. And a lot of people internally at HBO Max were like, or at HBO were like, look, you don't want to tarnish the brand because HBO is what it is. And so there was a lot of debate about that. And you know, at least with this, people understand, oh, I get Showtime stuff now too. I don't know that it's a great name, but it does sort of explain to your average consumer that like, oh, I would get Showtime if I subscribe with Paramount Plus. And like, so I think it sort of accomplishes that.
I don't know. Why not just call it Paramount Plus Showtime? Paramount Plus with Showtime.
Or just Paramount Plus Showtime, right? Because like that's sort of like, because Mike, who writes for us, he had made kind of made that joke, but I don't know how much he was joking. He's like, it was right there, you know? And, but look, I don't know. I mean, again, the branding stuff is, as these companies merge, as these bigger studios have to look at how to sort of manage their different media arms, it's not easy. And so I don't envy anyone having to make those decisions. At least here, your very average consumer understands what they're getting.
And of course, the merger here will likely result in layoffs and programming shakeups, which is unfortunate. But like, you know, there's going to be positions, you know, Showtime had an app, Paramount had an app. Like, you know, there's just like multiple people doing the same thing. So it makes sense if you're going to put them together that some people are going to probably lose their job.
Well, yeah. But, and it's important to note here that it's not just the name change. Like this is a merging of the two arms. So like,
yeah.
So you're going to have redundancies.
And the program shakeups have already started. So three Showtime series immediately have been canceled. That includes Let the Right One In, Three Women, and American Gigolo, none of which I've watched, but the showrunners are shopping around for new homes. There's a memo obtained by the Hollywood Reporter that comes via Paramount CEO Bob Bakish. It says, the new combined offering demonstrates how we can leverage our entire collection of content to drive deeper connections with consumers and greater value for our distribution partners. And the full integration of Showtime and Paramount will take place later this year. So it's not going to be something that happens right away. And it's going to impact the premium tier of Paramount Plus as well, which will share the new title along with the Showtime programming options. Chris McCarthy, president and CEO of Showtime and Paramount Media Networks, writes in another memo that the company will stop investing in projects that, quote, are underperforming and that account for less than 10% of our views, unquote.
That's a bold statement. Well, just because, I mean, if you look at, I mean, I guess Showtime, because I think he's mostly speaking about Showtime stuff, right? But like, if it's accounting for less than 10% of your views, well, how many shows do you have on the air at a given time, right? Like it, I don't know, that makes it seem like the amount of shows you're going to ultimately invest in are minimal and you better have like a big hit. And I sort of get that, but that, you know, you're sort of cutting out the Netflix strategy there where you can pitch to a smaller audience with the right show. You know, you're sort of saying you got to cast a wide net or nothing.
Well, that's actually a good question. How many Showtime shows do air at one time? Because, like, if you think about HBO before HBO Max, I don't know what it is now, but, like, they would only have one or two shows.
Well, no, not necessarily going at anyone. I mean, you'd probably have a handful.
Yeah.
You know, because they had different production cycles and HBO was never beholden to the standard network schedule. And also, you're not even thinking about, you're just thinking about their bigger, because they also always had stuff like Real Sports. They had
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, you talk about the amount of shows that they actually probably have going was a lot more than that. And even stuff like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but like stuff like Real Sex or some of those late night things, like, you know, like, or you had like, you know, so I mean, they probably had, you know, it's probably more than you realize, because you're talking about, you know, you're thinking about like Yellow Jackets. You're not thinking about, you know, the other stuff that's, but so that, but again, this gets to the point that they're going to start sort of, you know, really looking at that stuff and whether or not any of that's worth an investment to them.
Okay, I'm just going to quickly look at this. So currently, Showtime has Billions, the Chi.
I think that's been, God, that's been on for what, a handful of years now already.
Yeah, the L Word, Generation Q, Your Honor, mm-hmm. Yellow Jackets, Super Pumped. So that's six shows right there. Then they have a comedy, I Love That For You, and then they have a bunch of docuseries and unscripted, which I'm guessing does not count to this like 10% thing, because that's just so cheap to produce.
Well, maybe, you know, I don't know. But again, so what I'm saying is that's more than you probably realized. And so they're going to look at, you know, what really gets moving there. But the other thing I think is like, so I was talking a minute ago about, you know, sort of how if this Netflix password sharing thing works out, you're going to see a trend with other streamers probably following suit. Well, like, everyone last year was up in arms about what Warner Brothers Discovery was doing with HBO Max, where they were axing shows from the service. You know, things were disappearing from the service. Shows were canceled left and right. Things that were even in development. Well, now we're seeing Paramount Plus is doing similar stuff, right? Like Showtime's doing similar stuff. Because, like, I think even, I know you don't have it here, but like The Twilight Zone was removed from Paramount Plus, the revival with Jordan Peele. Like, so you're seeing this is now becoming an industry standard. Netflix has been doing stuff like this. So like, sure, someone's going to do an unpopular thing, but if it works and it makes business sense, other people will follow suit.
Well, we were operating in like this fantasy world where they could just greenlight as many shows as they wanted. And like the data didn't have to back, you know, renewal. Sure. Like, I don't know.
But you're not even talking about now greenlighting shows. You're talking about stuff that's been wrapped up for 2 years.
Yeah.
That like is, you know, that now is not going to have a home, you know, more or less. Like, unless, I think the weird strategy that we're going to see happening for a while now is what'll happen is like these shows that essentially like expired because they have no place on the homepage algorithm anymore for these streaming services, maybe they get licensed temporarily to a new streaming service, and then that seems quote unquote new on that other streaming service. So like if Netflix were to license the revived Twilight Zone series, it would have new and fresh value to them where it had sort of been like stale on that other streaming service. So you're going to get into this weird cycle now where other services are probably licensing content to other services now, which is so weird because like that gets away from the whole point of exclusivity that everyone had been operating on for years. And I don't know. I think it's all going to get so weird for a bit.
Okay. You can read about all these stories on slashfilm.com. You can find this podcast /Film Daily on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us your feedback, questions, comments, concerns to us at peter@slashfilm.com. And please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you on Monday.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.